Well, Jesse May Palooza is going to hang out with us in studio, and then your mind's going to be blown by a whistleblower, Callie Means. Everything you know about government and big pharma, turns out it's wrong. And we'll tell you why right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam. Jeff here. For these long volleyball odysseys, you're just going to have to start doing meth. I've just been thinking about it. If just for the weekend, it'll get you through. Good luck, buddy.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Callie Means is our guest. He's the co-founder of True Medicine. Also, a book coming out in the nearish future, but we'll see if we can figure out a date on that. TrueMedicine.care is where you can go to learn more. So I saw you in Tucker Carlson, and I was impressed. And it's something, it's a subject that just irks the shit out of me, that all roads lead to health, and yet we're working on all the spokes and not the hub. The hub is health and COVID and obesity and diabetes and depression and everything else, joint replacement. Everything is just off the hub, but we'll never go near the hub. It's all the end of the spoke around the rim.
I've become obsessed with this question. And, you know, I really liken it to my mom. I think it's a very standard American story. I was born overweight. She had gestational diabetes. It's like, oh, that's normal. You know, here's a drug. And then she has high cholesterol, takes a statin. Oh, that's a rite of passage. 30% of people over 40 are on a statin. Then metformin and high glucose and all of these warning signs, and we drug them and we profit from them. And that's how the system makes money. 95% of healthcare spending is after you get sick.
Just lay your background out for a second real quick before we go further into the story.
Yeah. So, right. I'm convinced this devil's bargain between food and health, where we're being poisoned by our food, and the healthcare system's profiting that and staying silent, is the biggest issue we face. And it goes back to my, you know, early career in politics. I was ideological. I was on campaigns, and inevitably you get into consulting. Both parties, you know, you do finish the campaign, and you're inevitably across the table from pharma and food companies and seeing inside the rooms. And a lot of people, I think, stay quiet on that because, you know, that's kind of the game. But I was disgusted by that. And over the previous, you know, past couple of years, particularly with some life events, my mom eventually dying of pancreatic cancer, which actually is tied to food. 90% of people with pancreatic cancer have prediabetes or diabetes, which is totally related to food. And I think we're being distracted. I mean, right now, just this week, we have the gas stove situation. It's like we're talking about gas stoves when the food being cooked on that stove. 25% of kids have diabetes, prediabetes. 50% of American adults have prediabetes or diabetes. So it's like we're being systematically gaslit. I'm an entrepreneur now. I'm working to change those incentives. But it really takes me back earlier in my career working for soda companies, working for the pharma companies, because there's a playbook. And the playbook is to rig institutions of trust, and it's to distract.
So I spoke to Dr. Drew this morning, thinking about having this conversation with you, and it harkened back to a conversation we used to have more than 25 years ago now, in the later 90s. And he was saying, and everyone was talking about the opioid epidemic, you know, and he would say to me, I have patients that are on 90 Vicodin a day, and I have other guys that are taking 50 Vicodin a day, and it's not unheard of to have people take 30 all day, every day, you know. And I'm just a dude from the valley, work construction, no education at all. And I just said, well, that sounds like a windfall for the pharmaceutical companies. And he said, oh, no, they don't want that. And I said, well, look, if you're producing pills, you're not going to make any money off of me on Vicodin. I'm not into Vicodin. And, you know, every 7 years I get an oral surgery and I get a prescription for Vicodin. I eat four of them. And we're done with the Vicodin. You couldn't possibly exist as a pharmaceutical company if I was your client, because I don't eat enough Vicodin. And let's not even call it Vicodin. Let's just say tamales, you know, or if I only went to Kukuru Chicken or El Pollo Loco, if I only went there every 7 years, they'd be out of fucking business. They're in the business of turning and churning and burning. And about you know, it was like 25 years ago. And Drew would go, no, they don't want that. They don't want that. And I'd go, why not? They're a business. That's what they do. They move units, you know. And, of course, he fought it bitterly because he was sort of ideological and he thought, no, they're doing the right thing and people want the right thing. And we're kind of talking about it as it pertains to Pfizer and COVID and vaccinations. Like, what the fuck is the government getting involved with Twitter for, taking down dissenting voices on getting your five-year-old vaccinated when you don't need your five-year-old vaccinated? And I was like, it's a business. It's units. That's what it is. The difference now, I guess, is they're fully in with the government and big tech and everything else. But he then said, yeah, I was wrong. It's about units. No different than cigarette companies hiring experts to tell you that tobacco's that tell you nicotine is not addictive. Like, it's a racket. That's what it is. I wonder why more people don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, I think it's very disheartening, and you've been talking about this. It's like crazy. Everything's screwed. But I actually think it's an empowering message. I think we should all embrace, you know, that we've been gaslit to trust the science, trust the system, and we really shouldn't. We should be asking questions. And yeah, in the past 25 years, every drug for a chronic condition, which is 95% of medical spending, the condition's gone up. More statins, more heart disease, more metformin, more diabetes, more SSRIs. 25% of the United States right now is on some kind of mental health medication. And depression and suicide is off the charts. Now we have this miracle cure for obesity. And just going into the incentives a little bit, you mentioned opioids. Back, you know, 2011, 2012, the opioid debate was very, very hot too. And I remember in a PR office in Washington, D.C., there was a list of professors for the pharma clients. And the donation strategy to universities, to research universities, is run by consultants. And there was a blue ribbon panel for opioids around that time to give guidance. The head of that was the dean of Stanford Med School, pain specialist. And they recommended for more lenient standards in opioids. Pfizer, one of the biggest opioid makers, gave a $4 million donation to the school that year. And the majority of people he appointed to that board were directly paid by opioid makers. So you know, that's kind of how you have it. It's rigging the institutions. You know, it's high up at Stanford, Harvard, the foundational nutritional research that said sugar doesn't cause obesity, which has led to trillions of dollars of healthcare costs, was a Harvard study paid for by sugar. You know, this is happening to today, but it's rigging those systems. And then the NIH and Dr. Fauci, they're all appointing outside experts to do drug approvals, to do research requests. And if companies are really able to get in there, they think they're good people, I think, in their heads. But this is a system. They're out of a job if more people aren't sick.
82% of independently funded studies show harm from sugar. Like, no shit.
Right.
Grandma knew that. That's 82. That's independently funded. 93% of industry sponsored studies said no harm. So
exactly.
That's all you need to know. Who's paying for the study? I've said it a million times. Mark Garagos will sit right where you sit, and when he's doing a case, he hires an expert. He hires a ballistic expert that says, my client couldn't have shot this guy because there's no way that 44 bullet could have traveled further than 9 feet. And you're like, what? And he's like, that's an expert. He's a ballistics expert. He's a ballistics expert who's being paid to tell a story on Mark's client's behalf. That's how it works.
We still fall for, I mean, you know, it's unimpeachable, right? It shuts down the debate when you see the news on both sides of the aisle when there's a peer-reviewed study. And I can just tell you from experience, those peer-reviewed studies from elite institutions are public relations documents. You know, Coke spends 11 times and food companies more on research than the NIH. And I think we're being asked to believe this ridiculousness, right? We're literally being asked to believe that these corporations are spending billions of dollars on studies, direct payments to research, and that they're doing that out of this philanthropic goodwill to advance unbiased research. I can tell you that's not the case. And we need to wake up.
Wasn't there just a study about Fruit Loops being healthier than beef?
Yeah. Yes. And and this is so this I'm never been a big Twitter guy, but tweeted that out, got a ton of attention, and Fox News started covering it. And, you know, I give credit to Fox News. 50% plus of news spending for most networks is pharma or food. And they're not touching any of these stories.
Well,
and that would be funny if it wasn't the preeminent nutritional research right now in the United States, funded by the NIH, also directly funded by food companies. And that's going into children's nutrition policies. It's inconscionable.
Yeah, what I was saying to Dr. Drew is, look, I get what Coke is doing, and I get what Nabisco is doing. I get what everyone who has a shingle hung out in Battle Creek, Michigan, Kellogg's, you know, I get what they're doing. I get what they're doing. And I kind of get what the government guys are doing because they're getting paid and the studies and all that kind of shit. Where are all the useful idiots coming from? What is CNN doing? Why are they? Why do they become shills and useful idiots for all the fucking nonsense? What are you people doing? Who the Great Barrington Declaration? Well, oh, they pulled all these virologists off the internet because they're dangerous. You don't want to look into that because they're saying something different than Fauci is saying. Does that seem suspicious? Like, this couldn't work without the useful idiots. It takes tons and tons of people who've never heard of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine to become overnight experts on it and then bloviate about how dangerous it is. Or they know nothing. Where did all the useful idiots come from? That's my question. What's CNN doing? What are all the Los Angeles Times? When did they all become experts?
Yeah, I think the biggest story, in my opinion, in the country right now is this Ozempic, this miracle obesity cure. And I think it gives a perfect case study of the tactic I've seen. So,
the one with the song?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Ozempic.
And that's for the diabetes. And now there's a full-on, all-out affront to make that approved for obesity for children as young as 12. Now, 40% of people between 5 and 12 are now obese. And they're outwardly... 5 and 12.
And they're going to medicate them.
And yes. The American... So let's go through it real quick. So the American Academy of Pediatrics, the useful idiots, I think I really feel for most people, they defer to institutions of trust. The American Academy of Pediatrics, credentials pediatricians is the gold standard. It's on the website. It's right there. They are majority funded by pharma. They came out and said that obese 12-year-olds should have this new shot. It's once a week, and you have to take it for the rest of your life.
Yes, listen, CDC, Fauci, the pediatrics experts, the 51 Intel agent experts who signed a letter saying that Biden laptop was had all the earmarks of Russian collusion. They're fucking lying, everybody. Just listen to me. I know you trot these guys out and cite these guys all the time because that's the game. That's how it's rigged. Wake up. You have to understand what's happening.
And it's funny. You know, Davos is happening right now. And I think the pull of the club, it really, you know, I've actually gotten emails from prominent academics. I'm tech bro calling this out. From prominent, I won't name them, but academics saying, you know, we know similar people from Harvard and Stanford, and, you know, I know some of your investors, and, you know, you don't want to upset the apple cart kind of threat type thing. I'm going to talk to them. And I think there's this, you know, people want to be invited on their, you know, CNN contract. They, you know, they have mortgages to pay. And there's a lot of defense in their mind that this is working. I think everyone can kind of go to sleep at night. But the fact is, when you have a nutrition study funded by processed food companies saying Lucky Charms is 3 times healthier than eggs, that is leading to the 25% prediabetes rate for children. That's cellular dysfunction. Like you think about like these public policy debates we're arguing, it's like literally the cells in our children are like malfunctioning at like an exponential rate. They're eating 100 times more sugar than they did 100 years ago. And it's like, we're just turning a blind eye to that because of the financial incentives.
One of the things that drives me nuts is every person I talk to who lost weight says two things. We don't see them for 9 months. And then you go, oh man, you lost some weight. How'd you do that? They go, stop drinking soda. That's number one. Yeah. Started walking.
My like friend Marty Caproni, too, said same thing. Stop drinking soda. And that worked for him.
Paisan. Yeah. Stop drinking soda. Start walking. They all start with, I stop drinking soda. And then later on, they start telling about some exercise. But stop drinking soda. Now, soda is the number one item purchased with food stamps, which freaked me out because I would have thought Velveeta cheese or something. I wouldn't even thought about a liquid. But sugary drinks, soda, whatever. Which is just a way to get fat without being satiated. Like you get all the fat, you never feel full, but you get all the calories. It's the number one item purchased with food stamps. Now, you get into this world, and this is the problem. The problem is if I say you can't buy soda with food stamps, then people look at me and go, "Oh, so you're racist?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, If it's affecting young black and brown kids, no, I'm actually an advocate for them because they have diabetes when they're 13. It comes down to the same shit as like school choice. Like, I don't want the mobbed up teachers unions. I want the poor black kid from the inner city to have school choice and voucher. And they go, oh, you're racist. It's like, wait a minute. You got this backwards. I'm the one who wants school choice. I'm the one who doesn't want diabetes. But you trot out the racist card and they know it works and they shut everyone down. They shut down the debate.
Yeah, they duped the right on that. So you have the right, you know, when we're talking about food stamps, saying that's patriarchal, that's the nanny state. It's like we're funding it $10 billion of government money, sugar water, that is directly going to trillions of dollars of downstream medical costs. So I'm all for the free markets. But when, first of all, the corn that turns into high fructose corn syrup in that Coke is heavily subsidized, right? Tens of billions of dollars. That turns into high fructose corn syrup. Fructose is a totally different kind of, it's a weaponized sugar. It actually turns off the hunger cues. So when your friends are drinking a lot of Coke, it actually makes you less hungry. That's why so much is loaded with fructose. It actually turns off a child's hunger cues. So we're subsidizing that. We're subsidizing the Coke, $10 million, the sugary drinks on the food stamps. And then we're crying that it's anti-free market nanny state to question that. So we've rigged the system and then shut down debate. And as we talked about, right, these groups are very adept, and this is happening obviously today, at paying these groups that, you know, call people racist, shut down debate, and you know, parents concerned about their kids drinking 100 times more sugar that's subsidized by the government are racist.
What about the story we were talking about the other week with you with the Coke and NAACP?
Yeah, so this is really instructive. I mean, obviously people in 2012 when the ag bill was up for debate were like, why are we subsidizing, you know, with obesity rates skyrocketing among kids, Coke? And there's a three-part playbook. You know, it was in the room with the NAACP, the oldest and arguably most prominent civil rights group who's done a lot of great things over American history. It's direct pay-to-play, and it's really a grotesque image, right? It's these PR executives, these old white PR executives from Coke, kind of very transactionally talking about how the NAACP will shut down debate. And it's just kind of grotesque, right? And it's millions of dollars. And this was reported in the New York Times at the time. And that really shifted the debate. So parents that were concerned about food stamp funding for sugar were, and that's 10%, $110 billion program. You know, and let's just back up. I try to ground myself in this. This is like a, you know, good talking point. It's kind of shocking, but like kids are on the chopping block right now. I mean, the obesity is skyrocketing, pre-diabetes, as I said, and what are we doing? We're loading them with SSRIs. 15% of high school seniors are on Adderall. That's a drug that was created by the Nazis to make German soldiers more effective. This book Blitzed, and actually was discontinued by the Nazis because everyone had psychosis. That literally is what 15% of kids are taking. SSRIs, now obesity, magical cures, which doesn't change the fact that they're still going to be eating, you know, this subsidized terrible food that's going to ruin their cells. Anyway, so the NAACP, we've talked about the research institutions and then the think tanks. You know, I was a good young conservative growing up, interned at the Heritage Foundation, the Gold Standard. It was dispiriting to see that institution and others just be totally pay to play.
So it's all money, follow the money. It's sad. It's like, you know, in 1996, when Dr. Drew was explaining to me that Big Pharma didn't want people to take 100 Vicodin a day, his argument was because it's wrong, you know, because that would make them bad people. And I'm like, it doesn't make them bad people. They're running a business. They have to move units.
They're going to get fired if they don't grow.
That's how it works. That's how we've gone into some sort of bizarre, you know, everybody needs to get vaccinated. We're not going to draw a distinction between people with pre-existing conditions or obesity or elderly or whatever. We're rolling out, you know, we got to get your four-year-old or your newborn vaccinated. And then so where do guys like Fauci come down on in this sort of role? And like, why wasn't he saying eat right, exercise, sunshine? You know, he was shelter in place, the first thing they shut down was the fucking gyms. And then why, where did all the useful idiots come from? Why do I have neighbors yelling at me to put my mask on or whatever? Listen to Fauci. Like, where did all you idiots come from? I kind of get CNN and Fox, and although Fox went the other direction with this stuff, CNN, yeah, they're getting money from Big Pharma, so then they have their Leanna Wen has to come on there and explain why triple masking is effective and scare the fuck out of everybody. And then everyone, to me, is like Leanna Wen. She was the one who was on CNN trying to freak out every mom in America for 2 years. And it's like, well, she's changed your opinion. My comment is fuck right off. You did way too much damage. You don't get a pass just because something happened in the last 20 minutes where you decided to look at fucking data for a change.
Yeah, and on the weaponizing the media, I think just to close the point, is Epic, the 60 Minutes shameful special, right, saying that obesity, even though it's really just a phenomenon in the past 50 years, is genetic and not based on lifestyle choice. every doctor was on the payroll of the drug maker. The drug maker, not research, but actually just direct bribes. They've given $30 million a year for the last several years, Ozempic. And CNN is having unbiased medical people on every day that are actually on the payroll. Of Ozempic. But when you get to the, I think it's a good question, and this is something I've really been trying to figure out. You know, when you get to the bureaucrats, these lifetime bureaucrats, this is how kind of the framework I use. Healthcare right now is the largest industry in the United States and the fastest growing, which is just crazy, right? It's the, you go down, you know, drive down the, you know, any town, and there's, you know, nurse recruitment signs. It's just this amoeba. And if a government bureaucrat wants to maintain power, you know, for decades, right, it's totally interwoven with the pharmaceutical industry. The FDA, their funding directly comes from pharmacy. It's 75% of the funding. The NIH is really just run by these blue ribbon panels of academics that are funded by pharma. Medical school, you know, my sister has really inspired me, was top of her class, Stanford Medical School, surgeon, abruptly quit because she's, you know, after this illustrious education, was looking over a patient, had no idea why they were inflamed and had to have literally cut into their sinuses to take out inflammation. It was her third of the day and she had no idea what was even happening. 80% of medical schools don't even teach one nutrition class to doctors today. It's all pharmacology, and you just trace the money. It's just this amoeba, and this is the incentive I think everyone needs to understand and really embrace. We're gaslit to not ask questions about our health, but every single institution, from the NIH to medical schools to pharma companies to hospitals, they make money when people are sick, and they lose money when they're healthy. And it's just that simple. To me, it's an empowerment message. It's like, chronic disease management, medicalization, it's been a disaster. Like, we're all getting sicker, more infertile, fatter, more depressed. It's like, we got to unplug from the system a little bit here.
Did you see that article, I think it was New York Times had years ago, about Carnegie and Rockefeller's involvement in adjusting the medical, specifically at Stanford, changing the way doctors were taught at that college and implementing a pharmaceutical approach to the way they were taught?
In the early 1900s,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the diversification of Rockefeller, he got very into pharmaceuticals.
Because he had like the synthetic, because he owned all the oil, and they found a way to like alter the synthetic to put into all the drugs.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. And he really engineered the medical curriculum that we still practice today at Johns Hopkins. And a very interesting story there, the father of modern medicine, of the residency kind of framework and our intervention-based framework that's driven this, his name is Dr. Halstead. His portrait is hung at almost every med school. He was a cocaine addict, came out later, and manic depressive. The residency where doctors like work for several days, at a time, was formed by him, but he had manic depressive episodes, you know, that didn't come out. So he was very aggressive. He belittled with the help of Rockefeller any other modality of kind of root cause or understand. Nutrition was not science-based. So there was really a calculated, very financially driven in the early 1900s to create evidence-based medicine from Rockefeller. And that Halstead, this manic depressive, who created these radical surgeries that ended up being very ineffective, he's still the foundation of medical training today.
So what about, you know, why doesn't or why didn't a guy like Fauci come out and talk about diet and exercise when it was abundantly clear that this was really impacting people that were overweight early? Why wasn't that a theme that he hit early and often?
Yeah, my hypothesis, I just go back to the incentives. So my hypothesis is that the NIH and what he runs is essentially a subsidiary of pharma. It's basically your research and development funding for pharma. So him being on the good side of pharma was necessary for him being in the job for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the framework of this innovation base, again, everything, the medical system, they don't ask how we stay healthy. It's like, how do we intervene once people are sick? So the entire focus was on an innovation-based strategy where both the government and these companies were investing billions of dollars. So you have this in all the emails. It's like, we can't even talk about natural immunity because we've got to sell the product. So right. He's really on the hook, right? There's a real pressure. And this is instructive for anything, right? When they're funding like drug efforts, right? So there's like, he looks bad if those don't sell well, those don't do well. So that's just the incentive that applies to everything. Like this blue ribbon panel on obesity, right? They're all paid off. You know, it's this cure. It's billions and billions of dollars, right? These are lifetime injections. And there's just this centrifugal force. And then, you know, PR executives in DC figure out how to, you know, pay off different levers of trust. And I don't blame the average person, right? It's, you got to defer.
I do. Yeah. I blame them.
You got to be compliant somehow.
No, listen, here's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You should sit back. Mm. There's a couple of clips keep running through my head. I'm looking at you, Ben and Dawson. Remember we're talking about the black chick's hair and the hair product was poisoning laser NBC. Color, but the MSNBC. But the second part of that was a whole it was diatribe on why you need to get your infant vaccinated. But listen, I'll tell you why I blame Ma and Pa Smith and the average American and the average citizen on the planet. That's all right. We'll get some brawny paper towels in here. First off, this shit ain't new. People have been talking about this kind of stuff for a long time, like big pharma and what's the government up to. And we've had plenty of Bay of Pigs and Kennedy assassinations, and you can buy it or not buy it. But the notion that your government is coming to you with a mainline of factual information on all subjects, we don't have a rich history of that. So first off, everyone be a little bit of a skeptic. That's all I'm saying. Like, wake up a little, be a little bit of a skeptic. Number one. Number two, study patterns. Study patterns. I was onto this 9 days in because I would always get the age with someone who died of any event, motorcycle accident, cancer, you know,
sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
61-year-old man died in La Habra on a freeway, whatever. When COVID rolled around, I stopped getting ages, and I immediately became suspicious. Why no ages? And the reason we didn't get ages is because it would be a 114-year-old man died in a nursing facility, but they didn't give ages. So I got suspicious. Then I started watching guys like Fauci, and Fauci started saying things like, well, you know, no ball games and no churches, no synagogues, no gyms. But if you want to march with BLM, I don't have an opinion on that. Well, that's inconsistent. You just shut down the Astros game and the soccer game and the football game, but you have no thoughts about masses of humanity coming together in the town square. So look for inconsistent things. Look for smart guys acting dumb. When they asked Fauci about natural immunity, he's like, well, we don't really know. You don't know what natural immunity is? You who've been studying natural immunity for 57 years have no thoughts about it? Watch out when CNN becomes an expert on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine overnight. Watch out when Sanjay Gupta is like, well, it's mainly for horses. Yeah, except for 200 billion people have taken it worldwide, and you can take it when you're pregnant. It's safe to take hydroxychloroquine when you're pregnant. So when guys like Gupta don't know stuff or say stuff for horses or stuff, be suspicious, people. Wake the fuck up. And when they tell you, wear the mask during the plane, but take it off when I give you the Fiesta mix, but then pull it back up before you take a sip of Fresca, but then you take it back down again. Be suspicious, idiots. Do not be useful idiots. That's what you guys turned into. We could have never got this off the ground without the millions of useful idiots who bought into everything, hook, line, and fucking sinker, and still do today.
They always will. There's always going to be that percentage of people who are just going to be sheeple and not
right.
want to think.
Yeah. But we got to lower it. We have to lower that percentage. That's what I'm saying. Oh, we'll listen to the doctor on MSNBC explain. Fred, this is 5 weeks old, why you need to get your infant vaccinated.
Right. So basically, like, you cannot name an ingredient, look it up to see what it is. There are plenty of apps and you can literally scan the zip or the barcode to tell you whether or not this chemicals that make up this product have been deemed safe and or more risky for you. And it needs to be pushed not only on the consumer to do background on
it. We don't need to watch the entire thing. It's the second half where she's talking about.
Right, but they went.
We're just collecting the end of the thought on the hair products causing cancer, and then we're going to get the transition.
Yeah,
okay,
it's coming up.
Okay. Tell parents out there who may be hesitant, because I'm just going to acknowledge that some folks, even if they weren't themselves hesitant to get the vaccine, they may have some questions when it comes to a child under the age of 5. So, speak to those parents at home. What do you want to tell them about vaccinating their children under 5 and how important that is?
Right. For one, I would hope they see that it did take a long time before this was rolled out because first, safety had to be verified. And that is most important. The second thing I want them to know is oftentimes this was stated early on that kids are protected. But what we know is that 6 times the number of kids died from COVID than the flu this past year. Right. We had 600 children who are no longer with us from 2021 because of COVID-19. And there is now a method that you can use to help protect your child from being hospitalized and keep them alive to see next year, right? And what we know is that we're getting more and more variants, that this is not a time to let down our guard, that we now have BA4 and BA5 that are coming out of South Africa. We're looking at that. And how do we stay ahead of the game? And there's a saying, you know, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Keep your kids vaccinated, make sure they're wearing those masks, and practice those same mitigating factors that we've been doing now for 2.5 years.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Yeah. Right. Oh, no, we got to keep going because she's talking about organ damage in like 80% of
long-term
people that get it. Remember, long hauler COVID.
Yeah.
Listen to what this crazy witch doctor said.
And remember, this is a piece about hair.
It started as a piece about black ladies with their hair, but they end up spending more time on getting your kid vaccinated. The first 3 minutes was hair relaxer. The next 4.5 minutes was a commercial for Pfizer. But play the rest. Just because
there's a saying, you know, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Keep your kids vaccinated. Make sure they're wearing those masks and practice those same mitigating factors that we've been doing now for 2.5 years.
Can you also speak to the question about long-term impacts of COVID infections on children versus, you know, some questions about long-term side effects of the vaccine?
Right. You know, and it's one of those things that the anti-vax movement has done a fantastic job at stoking those fears. What we do know is that COVID-19 is linked to a number of different disease processes that we can already trace. You know, they say, well, you can't tell the long-term consequences of the vaccine. Well, yes, we can. In this acute time, I've got my vaccine back in December 2020, right? I was the first person at the University of Virginia. We've now been able to track persons like me to see what has happened. Has anything changed? But what we also know is that we're tracking people who have COVID-19, children and adults alike. And what we know is that 1 in every 5 persons who've been infected with COVID-19 now has lingering disability where their organs, their heart, their lungs, their kidneys, their brain is no longer functioning in the same way that it was before they got infected with COVID-19.
20%.
And when you take that developing child whose organs have not come to what it's going to be for the rest of their life and you stress it out, and you put it on that treadmill and say, I want you to sprint. What does that do for the longevity of their life, not only in the quantity of their life and whether or not they will live a full life as we hope to live, but the quality of their life? What are the complications associated with that inflammatory response? So,
all right,
Kelly's hurting right now. I'm having a seizure. I'm having a seizure.
I watched this two months ago. This is not 2019. This is 2 months ago. They're doing a fucking commercial for Pfizer.
Yeah.
They didn't even do the segment. The segment is hair. They did more on the commercial front. Long-term organ damage. What the fuck is she talking about?
Not even getting into the vaccine situation. This is what really like physically just pains me about this. Having a new son is it is astronomical what's happening with autoimmune conditions are skyrocketing on kids. Allergies, diabetes. I mean, you never had a kid in the career of a diabetes doctor, you know, never saw a kid. It's called adult onset diabetes. They've changed that.
Yes.
It's 25% of teenagers now. It's like there's this absolute like destruction happening to kids. It has nothing to do with this. The kids are being born in utero. to a high degree with metabolic dysfunction because it can be passed on from the parents. You know, I was saying earlier, I was born at 12 pounds. A lot of kids are born overweight now, you know, which represents that I had metabolic dysfunction at birth, which really sets you up for a bad situation. But, you know, that then we're pounding our kids with antibiotics because they're getting sicker and sicker. It's hurting their microbiome. It's hurting their cells. So just like the fact that it's just this one little niche instead of the underlying situation, which is we're really poisoning our kids with a diet. It's inconscionable.
The genetic conversation is very dangerous, too, because if we're going to have the genetic familial disposition conversation, we also have to have the environmental and nutritional conversation, because essentially the nutritional aspect caused the genetic issue. So if you have this genetic predisposition to have diabetes, well, then where did your parents get it? Where did your parents' parents get it? It's like if you're predispositioned to, have these traumas that are handed down from your parents, well, there was an event that caused all of that. So there must have been some sort of event down the line historically. Hilarious!
Oh, God. Start talking about parents.
Oscar performance.
Your parents. Yeah. That's a code word.
But isn't there like... I keep going. But what I'm saying is, like, is diabetes being genetic sounds like bullshit to me.
This is very like, and again, I don't know why I'm the one having to say it. Any doctor can question this, I'd be happy to have this conversation. If you do not eat added sugar, if you look at your label and do not eat added sugar, there is almost a 0% chance you're going to get diabetes, right? And it goes to your personal choice thing. I mean, the one thing I just add to what you said, Adam, I'm a big personal choice guy. But you look at a public space, 80% of adults being obese, just people doing just mass decimating their bodies and really actually hurting their kids. I mean, drugs are powerful. We have made our food into drugs. And I think there is a real systemic situation. I think it's got to be a bottoms up revolution. People need to wake up and start asking questions. But like if we are drugging our food, 80% of the country isn't systematically trying to shorten their lives, but that's what's happening.
All right.
Is there a country that, well, that's... Sorry. Oh, God.
You got a clock in front of you,
right? I
know, but... All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll do more of this conversation with Callie Means right after this.
January 20th and 21st, Adam Carolla and John Popper are coming to Dallas.
John Popper's a really funny guy. He could open for me opening for him.
Hey, I've never done anything like this. It's going to be really cool.
Working Blue with Adam Carolla and John Popper. Two days in Dallas, Texas. There's a lot going on. So check out adamcarolla.com for individual tickets and packages.
We'll do a set of your favorite songs from the 90s and beyond.
If I'm doing my job, it's yours all that breaks. Because the hook brings you back.
Get individual tickets now for Adam Carolla and John Popper, Working Blue.
Well, John, if you want to do 5 minutes at the top of stand-up, it'll be
I'm willing to always do it, but, you know, just remember that you asked for it.
January 20th and 21st in Dallas, Texas.
And it really gives me an opportunity to kind of pursue stand-up, which is really what I've always wanted to do, but I was just good enough to know that I wasn't quite good enough.
Music, comedy, Popper, and Carolla.
Probably some vomiting.
Working Blue. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
All right, Jesse Mays here, Max Pata,
hey.
The Interrupter.
Yeah.
And Callie Means is here.
I'm my own Ranchero music for him.
It's a very important subject. Chris has a question, but me first, or a statement. I get what everyone is doing. Like, I get pharma, and I get Fauci. It's everyone else that's driving me nuts, that's got to drive this revolution the other direction. First things first, everyone, diet and exercise, your fucking grandparents, your grandparents, grandparents, great-grandparents, the founding fathers. Like, they know it. Stop it. There are no free lunches in nature. Wake up. Like, understand, little common sense, a little horse sense, everybody. You know, y'all, I'm going to eat Weight Watchers, dietetic fudge. It's not going to work. Like, figure it out. Like, and it drives me nuts that this isn't I get the people that are bought and paid for, but what about the sort of local, what's going on in the schools? You know what I mean? Like, why aren't they hitting this hard at that level? Like, why don't we have the information? All right.
If a
really
if a school
statement.
Did that, wouldn't they be shamed and then they just like point it out? Like who, how do you start something like that?
I get it, but when I was 7, I understood the difference between eating an apple and eating a piece of cake. Everyone understands that. Mm-hmm. But we would like to have the piece of cake versus the apple. And there's, now Lizzo has told us it's okay to eat the piece of cake versus the apple. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now. We're kind of in the crossroads of that. But how come more people didn't instinctively know more things about COVID or the spread of COVID or diet and exercise or health and the facts? Like, isn't this sort of no duh versus no shit? Why are so many people so blissfully ignorant? Or do they just want the junk food that bad? Because they're hooked on it. Like it's junky food at this point. Like they're in it. Like homeless people sleep outside in the rain because they want to do drugs. It's not because there's no shelter beds for them. Right. It's because the drugs are physically more important to them than shelter is. That's why they're outside. I feel in a weird way that's almost going on with food in a lot of people. I mean, it is a driving force for a lot of people I know. It's powerful.
Sugar's addictive. It's so addictive. And I always feel like thinking back, talking about growing up, we were forced all these messages and commercials about sugar cereal and sugary foods, breads and all of that, and salt was like demonized.
Right. Yeah.
But salt essentially isn't nearly as bad for us as sugar.
It's crazy. I would just go back to dopamine being a hell. I mean, that is what drives our lives. And I think we've kind of defaulted our definition of what a drug is, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we get up, right? We check our phones. That's dopamine. We get a coffee. People are watching porn. We go and drink alcohol at the end of the day. Everything, our little day is like just day to day to day going and getting the next dopamine hit. And sugar is a highly powerful it's like if you gave us heroin every morning against our will, in a couple of weeks we'd be addicted. It's like this is what's happening to kids. You look at a kid's birthday party with a bunch of 3-year-olds around a cake. It's like a bunch of meth addicts. And we are addicting. We're weaponizing the kids. This is very new. And again, it's like it's systematic dysfunction. So I think we need to understand that. I mean, it starts. I'm actually heartened by the bio-wearable revolution. This is very early, but in many states in the United States, still to this day, a patient can't legally have their medical records. We've totally just walled off any. It's like you're getting sick. We're here with the answer. But I think there's this. I think actually COVID. Some good things did happen. The elites were shown that they have absolutely no clothes here. And I think tens of millions of Americans are waking up. They're buying these bio-wearables. They're trying to understand what's going on inside their body. I think this is a bottoms-up revolution. But I do think underneath the surface, there's you're talking about it. A lot of folks are. But it's got to be bottoms-up there. We've got to try to understand what's going on.
I wonder if the phone and the dopamine, I've been loosely of having these ideas kind of run through my head, and I sort of picture sort of old America because I'm older than everyone in this building, and sort of new America. And we had long swaths of time in between wanting something and gratification or satisfaction. Like there was, when I grew up, it was Christmas and birthday. That was it. I was born at the end of May, so Christmas and birthday were kind of split the year, but it was 6 months in between getting shit that I wanted, not showing up Amazon at the door every day. And you were talking about the phone, and I was sort of thinking about as a kid, leaving the house at 8 a.m. and not coming back till 8 p.m, and there was nothing in between, suck off a hose in the neighbor's yard or whatever. We actually, where I grew up, there'd be like apricot trees and peach trees. You'd just get off your bike, eat some apricots off of someone's tree, and then get back, drink something off the hose, and then go back to it. And I, I, I've noticed that this gap, which used to be a big gap, you know, Christmas and your birthday and the months in between were the months you had to wait for whatever shit that you wanted, you know. And I started noticing with people like hitting off water bottles or like carrying around a coffee everywhere and just sucking off the water. And you go into meetings and you sit down in Century City or on a 41st floor sitting in air conditioning and someone comes in, water, is everyone need water? Yeah, because the elevator ride, I'm completely depleted. I have no salt left in my body for getting into that elevator. And it's like water. And I'm guilty of it too. You start looking at your phone. So this time between this little dopamine, whatever, has been compressed. It used to be years. You know, you had to build a cabin and it was going to take you 2 years to build the cabin or whatever. And then it got tightened up, you know, birthday to Christmas. Then it got shorter and shorter with like sort of fast food and then drive-throughs fast food and then Grubhub, like bring it to your door. The window, and I wonder if the phone, you checking on it every 9 minutes just shrinks that dopamine window. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, look at the phone, hit a coffee, what are we eating tonight? You know, it's like this constant, like, can't stop literally putting something in my mouth. Like, people are walking around sucking on vape things, drinking their coffee, looking at their phone. Like, it's been so compressed, and basically what you're saying to them is, we know you love Jack in the Box, but you got to give it a few weeks. Like, a few weeks. I'm ordering it now.
That's
like,
open 24 hours.
And I don't know that we're ever going to get around. If we don't address that, we're never going to fix any of the shit we're talking about. And by the way, that applies to studying and getting degrees and delayed gratification. And then what the politicians have figured out, like that story that was in Virginia recently where they just went, we're not going to let the kids who are on the honor roll know they're on the honor roll because we don't want to shame the other kids. And that, if you're going to start fucking with math scores and stuff now, now it's completely on and out the window.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's so simple what you're saying, and it's just like when you say it like that, it's like, how is this not the foundation of how we're thinking about human public policy? It's our brains, right? It's our brains are totally evolutionarily out of whack. Now, there's some great advancements in the past 100 years, but you look at the foundation of what impacts our reality, how we percept the world. It's food is number one. Our sleep is totally out of whack. That's a whole nother rabbit hole. The sedentary, you know, behavior among kids. You talk about schools. We are not evolutionarily designed to be sit in a sunless box, you know, kids for 8 hours, right? And then there's just absolute fireworks going on in the brain with all of the stimulation that we have. It's to me, it's very simple. It's evolutionarily unprecedented for our brains. And then that goes to interpret our realities. If our cells and our brains are malfunctioning a little bit, you know, obviously then you have mass increase. You know, the number two cause of death for a teenager right now is suicide. It's off the charts. You know,
it's not COVID.
It's suicide. And, you know, 25% of young adults, according to the CDC, during COVID, contemplated suicide.
And that dopamine roller coaster has to feed into that, causing depression and probably some delusionment.
And it's just like, okay, so we're just let's, and everyone's profiting from that. Right.
All right.
A hospital is the largest employer in the majority of the U.S. states. You know, I was in Texas recently, and the governor of Texas, a conservative, was praising and bragging that the Texas Medical Center in Houston could be seen from space. It's like, I don't know if that's a good thing. but it's seen as this jobs program. You know, so everyone's kind of winning. Everyone's profiting. Politicians are doing fine. You know, both parties are getting. But it's like, our brains are just like under assault. It's just that simple. And until we realize that from public policy, until we like fundamentally ask it. And to me, it gets to something I would have thought was very, you know, very sounded very soft years ago. But it's like we have to like feed ourselves better food. We have to like think about that from it's personal responsibility. But it's like a person in this country has trillions of dollars, $4 trillion health system, $6 trillion food system. It is totally against them. So, you know, I think it's personal responsibility, but it's got to get to some systemic change because we're just not going to drug our way out of the situation. I mean, it really is existential. And we're talking about stoves.
Okay. So first things first, just no free lunches in nature. There's no pills. that it just they'll work temporarily, then they won't work, and then you'll have to take more pills, and that's just the way it works. It's just if it sounds too good to be true, it's too easy, you know. When people, you know, people do this thing where they go, "I got the lobster bisque sub at Subway for $2. It sucked," and I'm like, "Yeah, because there's no such thing as a lobster sandwich for $2."
Right, right.
Yeah, but it was $2. Like, it's like, yeah, because it can't work. Yeah. There's a math that can't work.
Live in reality here.
You taking pills cannot work to affect your mood and your weight and your disposition and everything else. It just won't. It can't. It can do it for 10 minutes. And then also understand everybody is selling something, and sadly, the government is in on the fix. That's the part you didn't know. You knew what... You know what Pfizer was doing. You didn't know what Fauci was doing. And you didn't know what CNN was doing. You thought Fauci and CNN were reporting, and then Pfizer was just, you know, their company. They're going to do what they're going to do. You didn't know everyone was in on it. So you're going to have to start sort of collecting your own data, and you're going to have to start getting suspicious when people are pulled off the internet or dragged through the town square and tarred and feathered for saying things like, don't close schools, you're going to hurt the kids. And you have to understand who's speaking for who. Like, who says open the schools or close the schools? Well, if you have the head of the LA Unified School District union member saying close schools, and then you have the anonymous doctor from Stanford saying, I think it'd be a bad idea. Well, he doesn't have a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. He's just an expert who's weighing in. You have a bunch of constituents and union members, and you've got a whole thing. So start looking at who's getting paid and how they're getting paid. But it reminded me years ago when my son was first born. He's 16 and a half now. He's a beautiful head. Yeah. Beautiful head, as Trump would say. When he was born, the doctor said, his skull may be a little misshaped. Right. Maybe a little misshaped. Maybe you could use one of those corrective helmets, you know, whatever. Now, I, as the guy who grew up with not a human being in any school I ever went to who had a peanut allergy,
right,
I would raise my hand and go, how come nobody I ever met had a peanut allergy and no kid I ever went to school with, not to mention the peanut-free zones they've cordoned off and everything. And now 31% of kids have peanut allergies or asthma or diabetes or whatever we're talking about. How could this be? How can this be? So no one ever knew wore a corrective helmet. And now my kid gets recommended the corrective helmet. And like, I'm talking to people. I was talking to Joel McHale. It's like, yeah, Mike, they did a helmet for my kid too. We did it up like the
Seattle
Seahawks, like whatever. And then I was like, he looks fine to me, and the physician said his glasses may not sit right on his face, like Mr. Potato Head got run over or something, you know, glasses skewed. And I was like, that doesn't – now, here's the component that we're not talking about because nobody wants shit. Mm. They get the wives involved. The women have become fucking hysterics, and they're going nuts with the fucking women, and the women set – the agenda for the household. There's no possible way when the craniologist says to my wife, kid needs a helmet. You think I'm going to fight that battle or win that battle?
Nope.
It's impossible. And when they start talking about COVID and Purell and wiping things down and not when the crazy bitch on CNN, they're talking to all the women. And the women are going fucking nuts, and they've been weaponized, and now they're setting the agenda for the home because the guy's not going to be able to push through any kind of policy. She's got the agenda. So they say to the wife, he needs a helmet or sunglasses aren't going to sit right on his head. I then do the move where I go, I've never heard of this. No one I knew ever had this. I think this is a scam. I don't know what they're talking about. He looks fine to me, by the way. I don't see any problem with his skull. Oh, no, 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 no. We are going to the specialist and getting him outfitted with a special helmet that's $5,000 for a fucking skateboard helmet with a little extra padding. It's $5,000, and then we get the helmet on, and he has to wear it 19 hours out of the day, and he doesn't last 10 minutes with the helmet on because he's sweating and crying, and we take the helmet off and throw it away. But that's the scam. And it seems pretty innocuous, but now blow it up about 10 million times bigger with pharma and everything else. All the drugs they want to feed the kids. You know, I went in. We talked to a specialist. He said I needed to get on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. The doctor recommended that he have a dose of whatever. You're not going to do that battle at home. You're not going to be the guy who says, you know what? Get up early. Let's go for a hike. We'll do some push-ups. Mm-hmm. Then we'll take a cold dunk and we'll listen to Wagner. They'd be like, you'll be divorced in 10 seconds. So I think a lot of this is getting the housewives and the ladies in, freaking them the fuck out, and then selling them all the helmets and the drugs.
It's huge. I mean, fear, and just to get a little bit metaphysical here, but like fear has been weaponized by a systemic degree, which I think is having huge societal impacts because we're just having less awe and curiosity about our bodies. like we're just in constant state of fear. And that's not an environment for thriving. You know, just a personal story there real quick. As I mentioned, kind of the foundational, my mom getting pancreatic cancer, she died 13 days later. And, you know, the medical system was nowhere where she had all these warning signs, but then it's, oh, we need to do this. We need to do this intervention, this intervention, this intervention. And it was going to be a lot of surgeries, COVID, she would have been alone. And we asked, my sister thankfully asked, well, what's the chances of these interventions helping? They're like, well, 50%, it's going to actually decrease her life and maybe it'll increase it a week. So we said no. And those 13 days were the most profound and important days of our lives were, you know, in the final days with my mother. You know, it truly like changed me as a person watching how she dealt with death, sat in the house, you know, read hundreds of letters from people that she's impacted in her life. In her life, for 99.9% of people, you're dealing with cancer, right? It's like, oh, of course, you know, it's like the doctors were shocked that we were, and it turns out the biopsy, the surgery that they would have done, it would have taken much more than 13 days to get that back. They wouldn't have even had the results. And she would have had to be in the COVID ward, not seeing us, died alone. So it's just time after, but it's fear. I mean,
yes.
I mean, it's just like that was the most important time of my life. Most other people, because how do you say no to a doctor at that point? And they use that, not consciously. These were the top oncologists in the world at Stanford. And, they don't think they're evil, but it's just, and they are reprimanded. Their job and salary is tied to interventions. That yes. lost the hospital hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So understanding that, I do think moms are waking up. From my little small perch on this tweet, I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of messages from moms. Something's not right when you look into a classroom right now and what's happening to kids. And I do think a lot of moms are waking up.
I wonder how much of this is sort of the death of religion. And what I mean is I'm not a religious person, but I understand it serves a purpose and kind of keeps people in a different headspace. And you take something like Fauci and COVID and all the stuff we're kind of talking about, it almost turns into a religion for atheists. I mean, they literally had St. Fauci candles and stuff like that. Now, I'll guarantee no religious people bought a Fauci candle done up like the Virgin Guadalupe, but those were all non-religious people. And the people I know that went the hardest into COVID and all the nonsense of COVID, like he's not wearing a mask outside on the horse trail and stuff like that, those were all atheists, those are non-religious people. I think a lot of the damage is as religion wanes, there's a vacuum and something else replaces it, and that something else is not good. And that's part of what we're living right now. We saw it sort of supersized with COVID. It became a religion. And with all the tenets of a religion, like if that guy doesn't want to get vaccinated, then he shouldn't be allowed to come back to work. And they shouldn't be allowed in hospitals if you're going to put us in danger. Like it took on all the worst characteristics of a religion in like 10 seconds.
It's a different kind of conformity that we're falling into.
And all those people became celebrities. Fauci became, instead of like someone who's speaking, he was a celebrity to people. He was, idolized. These people were idolized. Every single person who's talking during that time became idled.
It's so... Michael Avenatti, the guy who's rotting in prison right now, been arrested under the RICO Act, he turned into a religious deity for all the bitches at The View. They talked about him with a religious fervor.
Do you see his jawline, though?
Yes, good looking. All right, Jesse May, why don't you ask Callie a long-winded question and talk about your feelings as a woman and trusting your having an instinct as a woman.
Okay.
And then Dawson, get ready.
So I know there's a lot of misinformation out there. I get most of mine from Instagram. I feel like that's a reputable place. And I'm just confused as to like the whole sugar of it all, because honestly, I don't see a problem with sugar. You know, I was born with a diabetic predisposition, so I just assumed my kid's going to have diabetes, and the medication sounds like it's really going to work. So I'm really hopeful. Like, what could really go wrong? Like, pharmaceuticals aren't out to hurt me. They're out to help. I mean, literally health. You can't spell health without part of health. And the P part is taken care of by the physician. There's a P in physician. So I just feel like there's a healthy physician who's not trying to lie to you. I mean, I grew up on sugar.
All right, all right.
But I'm truly fine.
Very well done. All right, let's see. Callie Means,
yes, sir.
Where do we find you? Sorry, I got two bios on you.
Yeah, so we're working on a company to change these incentives. I do think there are a couple answers, but we asked how do we incentivize food, and there is a way to do that. We have the $150 billion in these HSA, FSA accounts, and we're working to allow people to spend tax-free money on food. So it's truemedicine.care and Twitter, Callie Means, trying to expose been talking to some very interesting people. I mean, Bill Ackman retweeted this, called for a class action lawsuit. There's we're in touch with some members of Congress on congressional investigation. So it is gratifying to be a small part of pushing this forward. And we're tweeting a lot there at Callie Means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a stout fuck off to everyone who's like, why are you bugging these people and wanting to know what happened? Like, we want to know. I want to know. I don't want to have to listen to these people again. I don't want this to happen again. Mm-hmm. We should know what happened. If something happened, if the government was colluding with big tech to stifle people and get them fired and get them destroyed, the reputation is hurt, I would like to know about that relationship. That's all. And if nothing happened, then nothing happened. Mm. So you can look into things,
right?
And then you can find nothing,
right?
I mean, and then you can move on. So if there isn't anything, but there will be, there'll be tons of it, then I would like to know. That's all.
Same.
Jesse May Peluso, podcast Sharp Tongue, wherever you listen to finer podcasts. Dates coming up, Omaha Funny Bone, February 3rd and the 4th, and then the Comedy Store. That's in La Jolla, California. That's Valentine's Day. JesseMay.com is where you go. Always good to see you, Jesse May.
Thanks for having me back.
Me everywhere. Palm Beach and Baltimore and Raleigh and Naples. Just go to AdamCarolla.com. We'll see you in Dallas coming up this weekend. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla, Chris Max Pata, Jesse May Peluso, and Callie Means saying mahalo.
Get yourself a copy of Adam's latest book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. It's available everywhere. Finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see us this weekend in Dallas at AdamCarolla.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.